This is a People First Radio podcast.
You're trapped in an apartment and need to escape, but you're caught in this continuous loop. That's the basic premise of She Could Fly, a point-and-click game that came out earlier this month. The not-for-profit computer game was inspired by a graphic novel of the same name, but it's not a straight adaptation. One of the main goals of She Could Fly, the game, is to increase awareness of and end trivialization of obsessive-compulsive disorder, or OCD for short. The creative team collaborated with scientists, the charity OCD Action, and people with lived experience of OCD to inform the game design. I spoke with two of the members of that creative team.
Hi, Joe. So my name's Sarah Kenny. I'm based in the UK. And for the past 25 years, I've been working in TV, comics and games, but with a focus on science and health.
I'm Marae Duran. I'm the co-producer of She Could Fly documentary escape game. And I've got lived experience of OCD, which was very relevant to the role in this case.
Well, thank you both very much for making some time to speak with me. So you've set out to capture the experience of OCD in a documentary escape video game. Where do you start?
That's a really interesting question. I mean, we were very, very lucky in that we had the source material of the comic book She Could Fly, written by Christopher Cantwell and drawn by Marti Morazzo. And it comes out on Berger Books, Dark Horse Comics. And the story is of a girl, Luna, who is 15 and lives with OCD and witnesses a woman flying in the sky, and she becomes very obsessed with her. But through the comic, you see she has these sort of extraordinary, visceral, intrusive thoughts, very violent, intrusive thoughts. And she's really battling with how to deal with this situation as a young girl. And so our starting point was this extraordinary comic to work with. Now, we don't recreate the story world of the comic in the game. We wanted to think about how we could incorporate the game, but sort of create this sort of escape experience, this looping escape experience, which kind of is a metaphor, if you like, for those looping thoughts that you live with when you have OCD. So the starting point was kind of like, how do we represent and bring in the sort of documentary elements and segue between the documentary, the game, and the comic in a way that feels like, you know, it's got a satisfying story, we've got a narrative you're following, and also we're making the most out of these different elements.
And I should say, maybe for folks listening, the way the game works is, as you say, you're kind of walking around this house, and every so often you kind of transition to, maybe the term documentary escape game is appropriate, because you transition to watching these videos of people with lived expertise, of people who are, say, a professor at Oxford University, who are speaking just sort of about different aspects of OCD, and then you flip back and forth between that and the game world. And you mentioned there that kind of this idea of, like, you're trying to escape from this apartment and it's a loop is kind of like a metaphor for OCD. I'm curious just about the idea of, like, using a video game, how you can convey things in a way that you couldn't if you were just, you know, making a film or what have you.
I think because you actively have to do things within the game, so you kind of join the game and you have the narrator voice as a streamer who is playing the game and welcoming you in. So we kind of try and play a bit with the format. And I think because you were making decisions and the game, without giving too much away, sort of encourages you to do certain things and certain behaviours, that it's different in that you are having to actively take part in that storyline, and it's not linear. So you could do things although, you know, we have the different loops, which kind of gives it a vaguely linear format. But you are exploring and you're looping around and you're making choices, if you like, about how you play the game and which bits you do and which bits you don't. But I mean, Marae, you probably have thoughts about, in terms of that, the game as a representation of the looping thoughts in your head, how that feels.
Yeah, I think that the game format, I wasn't a gamer and I'm not, you know, I'm not that familiar with gaming, but I obviously came onto this project through the documentary side of things, and then informed the development of the game, and so did all the other lived experience experts through their stories, and seeing how like our experiences could be translated into like the game design, into these loops, into the symbols within the game. It was such a cool experience, like to see how, yeah, creatively such difficult experiences could be shown and conveyed to people without the experience, but also people with the experience who've played it and felt really seen. So I think, yeah, the active aspect of it, the fact that you're making decisions that might help you understand the decisions made by someone with OCD, which often don't even feel like decisions, but feel like necessary in order to feel safe. Yeah, it might be helpful for me to describe the OCD cycle, because I'm really passionate about people understanding that, which is basically where someone with OCD, everybody with OCD experiences either like intrusive thoughts, images, urges, sensations, which are distressing and uncomfortable for the person experiencing them. And because of the overwhelm and anxiety that they bring, the person feels it's a necessity to do a behavior or an action, which is called a compulsion, to soothe themselves, to make sure that they're safe, to make sure that others are safe. And then by doing those compulsions, the person's confirming to themselves that those thoughts and images and urges were dangerous. They did need solving and reacting to. And so the cycle continues in that way. And so, yeah, I think that the game and its loops and its the behaviors in the game can kind of show somebody more fully that cycle than simply describing it as I just did.
Yeah, one of the biggest themes I picked up from maybe the videos in the game is that a lot of people don't really understand both first just what OCD is, and then second, how significant of an impact it has on people's lives. Could you maybe tell me about that?
Yeah, like I think even before I was diagnosed, before I even realized myself I had it, I thought of it as well like as quite a trivial thing, something to do with like cleanliness and tidiness, and that's it. And I think that's what it is in most people's minds. But in reality, obviously, when I realized that what I'd been struggling with these distressing intrusive thoughts and lots of like mental compulsions, so things that happened in my mind, not visible to the eye, so like rumination, thinking over past events, seeking reassurance from people, like reassurance from the internet, researching things in order to like quell these anxieties. Once I realized that that was all OCD, I was so gobsmacked, because I thought it was, you know, this trivial kind of personality quirk. And I think that's, yeah, it's really disappointing. Like when you realize what it is, especially if you have it like me, then you're like, oh, I need to educate people. I need other people that were suffering in silence like myself to know what it is. But yeah, it's really misunderstood, and that's deeply worrying and harmful to people who are suffering in silence. And then also to people who know they've got it, but who find it difficult to access the treatments for it because of lack of funding and lack of service provision for this disorder. So yeah, I think the kind of widespread trivialization and misunderstanding has like very, very real effects.
And it's also interesting that it's the mental health problem that takes the longest to diagnose. So the average in the UK is 7 years, which is really extraordinary. And that's come down from, it used to be a lot longer. And also the fact that it can manifest in children. So, it, you know, 7, 8 years old, people describe as having compulsions. And again, that's something that is less common in other mental health problems. So it's really important that people understand what it is and what it isn't, so that, you know, if you have children or, you know, people experiencing it for long periods of time, you know, we really do need to have a very clear understanding of how to recognize it and how to help people, particularly when it's, you know, children.
You're listening to People First Radio. My guests are Sarah Kenny and Mairead Rouran. They're part of the development team of She Could Fly, a video game that educates around obsessive compulsive disorder. You mentioned there the trivialization. Could you tell me, is that so the idea that someone might say, oh, I'm so OCD, with their, I don't know, particular about how they're how tidy their room is or something. Is that the kind of thing you're talking about? And maybe what are some of the consequences of that?
Yeah, I think that's kind of, the use of or misuse of the word as, or the words OCD as obsessive compulsive disorder as an adjective. Yeah, that is, I think that's more symbolic of the widespread understanding. I think it does have real effects. Like when people misuse it in that way, it adds to this narrative that it is something quite silly and that it is to do with cleanliness and tidiness and those types of things, because that's usually the context in which people are saying it, when actually in reality, one of the most common intrusive thoughts is around harm and whether you've harmed somebody or whether you're going to cause harm. And so that's not the context in which people are saying it, and it's not being used in the right way. So people, when they're experiencing these distressing intrusive thoughts and compulsions, they don't know that they've got it. In part because people around them have been using it wrongly their whole lives probably, but also that all then comes, I think, as well from inaccurate media depictions of the disorder. So I don't blame kind of individuals who have misunderstood it, because I had myself. I just think that we need a shift in order to better understand it in our societies.
We're kind of maybe covering this in some of the broad strokes, but maybe I'll ask really explicitly, what do you think are the most important things someone is listening that they know about OCD?
I think that it works as a cycle. So if you're, I'm initially thinking about people who are struggling with it, who don't know that they are, but they know that they're struggling. They've experienced a lot of anxiety around these specific thoughts or images, as I did, but who have no idea that that's OCD. I think that if they can recognize that they're experiencing those things and that that's driving them to spend a lot of time either in their head ruminating about it or causing them to do a lot of actions and behaviors that in their lives that are about in response to that thought or image, then that's OCD. And I think that the cycle is really important because everybody experiences intrusive thoughts. So just experiencing intrusive thoughts doesn't mean you have OCD. That just means you're a human with a brain. But if you experience anxiety in response to it, and where that anxiety is where the compulsion is too. There's often a compulsion there, even if you can't recognize it. Sometimes when you think about it more, have I spent hours upon hours trying to resolve it, either through speaking about it with somebody or through researching it on Google or through ruminating? It's not always visible, as I say. It's not always tapping and cleaning your hands and things like that, although it can be. Excessive hand washing can be a response to an intrusive thought about whether you've caught a disease that's then going to kill your children or something. But it's never about, oh, let me just clean because that's fun and I quite like cleaning. When the cleaning comes, it's probably about huge kind of distressing topics and consequences that you believe are going to happen. It's not about enjoyment.
And Sarah, I believe I read somewhere else that you kind of, this process started with, you got a grant and you thought, let's make a video game. What did the going through the process of developing that and making a video game, in sort of like an educational way, what did you maybe learn from that process?
I mean, it was a really big leap. It was interesting because it kind of, for a few years, we've been running immersive experiences at Thought Bubble Comic Con in Leeds. And we'd started by running these immersive experiences and game experiences within a sort of a real environment where people would walk into a space. It would be inspired by a comic. We covered sort of Surgeon X, The Wicked and the Divine, The Walking Dead. And each one had a theme and we had experts in the room, but they might be dressed up as characters. And so you'd walk around and you'd speak to the experts as if they were a character from the comic or adjacent to the comic. And you'd have these little games that you would do. And so it kind of started in this real space. And then after the pandemic hit, we were thinking about whether we could do a digital version. And so it was for me, it was a really steep learning curve. I worked in telly and, factual and drama and comics. And it was sort of learning how to write in this different way and what was involved in sort of creating it. It was a huge learning curve. And I think because we were trying to do something a bit different, I guess, combining the comics with the documentaries, again, I worked with a brilliant escape game designer called Minkette, and then two brilliant game designers, Chance Miller and David Mitchell. And so we'd spent a lot of time thinking about the grammar of the game, like how would it work? How what would be satisfying. You know, we started with a lot more loops, we had to cut them down. What could we actually do for the budget? I mean, it was really, we started with a very small pot of money and just gradually sort of built up from there. So the development process, that side of it was fascinating, because like many projects, like you start thinking of an idea for a story and it can go in a million different directions, and it's about making those choices. But with the game, I think it feels like there's even more directions you could go in, because it's not a linear story. So the actual process of it's very different. And I feel like I've learned a lot. You always improve your writing skills when you try and write in a different way, a different format. But it was also immensely satisfying. It's kind of, there's a lot of space to play in the world of games. There's kind of a lot of interesting and new and different things you can do. So I find it fascinating, and I'd like to make more games with the science and health embedded in them.
I'm curious too about the idea of maybe finding a balance. So we've talked a few times about like documentary escape game. How did you decide sort of what to try and cover as like, this is people sharing these experiences in these videos in the game, and then these are things that, you know, are coming across in sort of more like a metaphorical way through the gameplay mechanics themselves. Like, what was that feeling that out process like?
We really wanted them all to link, so it not to be like big gear change. So you, when you walk into the flat, one of your quests, if you like, is picking up the comic is ripped up, and you're picking up the comic pieces, and you've got to put them on the plinth. And once you've placed them on the plinth, you then have within the comic, you can read the comic, but there are little sections on there that you click on and you can watch the documentaries. And you can't actually escape the loop without, because the clues are in the documentary. So the documentaries aren't just add-ons or bolt-ons. They're very much integral to the game. So what you learn in them, that behavior you learn in them, or something that's said in the game, in the documentaries, very much influences the gameplay. And so we didn't want them to be these separate things, in that what you see in the comic page is something that's happening in the comic pages, then links to what's been said in the documentaries. And so they're woven together. We spend a lot of time cutting the documentaries and thinking about, well, what is it that we need to learn from these clips in order to kind of solve this puzzle? And how does it link with the images? So it wasn't sort of random. It was kind of quite, we spent a lot of time thinking about it. And also we would test the game. So we had several rounds of testing. And at one point the documentary clips were just too long. So, you know, I'm from long form documentary. We make up an hour long film, and it's like, and our clips, I don't know, I think our clips were 2 to 3 minutes, and we cut them down to 1 to 2 minutes. It was really hard, because then how you found that process, Mairead, that editing them down? I found it's quite hard, and we could have cut them even shorter, to be honest.
I felt like they were, no, I think they were the right time. I think at the beginning they were too long, but obviously they were cut ready for the game in a more engaging way. And I think that, well, I found them engaging to begin with, but I think now with like the use of Instagram reels and TikTok reels, like people have a much shorter engagement span for like video. So I think in this kind of format anyway, where the rest of the game can be quite fast paced, I suppose then to sit still and watch for longer, you just kind of, you're on quite a bit of a faster pace. So I think that they work perfectly in the end.
Well, what was it like for you, I don't know, maybe playing through the game or watching it evolve? Like, can you tell me what your sort of feedback or input process was like?
I think the feedback, so I would kind of say, like, you know, if I thought something worked, like certain uses of humor, because we wanted to use humor in the game, obviously, and in the story, because it's, you know, a good way to engage people. Who doesn't like to have a laugh, you know? But at the same time, we wanted to be really sensitive with how we used humor around OCD, because of that trivialization we spoke about before, often is used with humor, and OC is often the butt of a joke. So I was kind of being very sensitive around that, and making sure that we were, yeah, sensitive around that, and that it kind of hit right as someone with OCD. Yeah, whether that was like the symbolism within the game, or like outright kind of myths that we were trying to bust, like how we framed all of that sort of thing, the language in the game, and the script, the documentaries, of course. Yeah, I think I think just keeping kind of like a sense checker on to the experience was one of my main roles. But the experiences initially were all of our lived experiences, all the experts. So obviously not every experience was my own, but it was like knowing where, maybe when you push the line too far with this thing, and when it does kind of hit right as someone with OCD.
It's really important to have that barometer. I have to say, I mean, I've been saying that this game would not be anything like it is without the sort of lived experience input. And it was really important for them to sort of guide on not just what it felt like in their stories, but kind of, yeah, like the sensibilities when we were trying to sort of use, like you said, use humour. But also, you know, part of this project is very much, we've got a whole other part to the project where we ran a theory of change to look at what the experts by experience and the psychologists, what do they want to see change in the outside world around OCD? And we create this theory of change. We've got sort of four goals, which we'll be sharing with, you know, the medical community and the media, et cetera, in terms of points of change that we think are really, really important. So that whenever I create a project, we always, the actual game or the comic or whatever is the tip of the iceberg, if you like really the process of creation and the art and et cetera is about having a conversation and is about thinking and working through what is important, what do we want to see change. And so I think, you know, Mairead's input in that as well and helping us to kind of think through very carefully what the four goals are and how we discuss them with the world, that's very much a big chunk of the project as well as the game. And actually you couldn't probably do one without the other, because the creative process and the having the conversations about the game helped us to kind of unpick those things and think about those things.
This is People First Radio. I'm speaking with Sarah Kenny and Mairead Rouhan. They're two of the creative team behind She Could Fly, a video game that aims to educate around obsessive compulsive disorder. Here's some information on OCD from HealthLink BC. Obsessions are unwanted thoughts, ideas, and impulses. They won't go away. Compulsions are behaviors that you repeat to try and control the obsessions. The symptoms usually take up a lot of time, more than 1 hour a day. Treatment for OCD includes counseling and medicines. Using both tends to work best. Counseling includes a type of cognitive behavioral therapy called exposure and response prevention, ERP for short. ERP slowly increases your contact with the thing that causes worries or anxiety. With the help of a counselor, ERP can reduce one's symptoms over time. That information is from HealthLink BC. You can find more on their website, healthlinkbc.ca. Now back to my conversation with Sarah Kenny and Mairead Rouhan on the documentary escape game, She Could Fly. Those four goals, I'll just share them with folks: to end trivialization and increase understanding of OCD, to recognize and count people with OCD, to guarantee timely access to clinically recommended treatments, and to fund research to understand the social determinants of OCD. Were there any parts, any times during this whole process where you felt like this specific thing we did really like knocked it out of the park in terms of being able to achieve those goals?
I think, like, I was looking at our insights today for, so our analytics for our social media, and we made 99.6k impressions on Instagram, just on Instagram alone, which was our main account for social media. So I think, you know, that's 99.6 thousand impressions. I think, like, that a lot of that content is on raising awareness of OCD. It's sound bites from the clips that really educate people on the disorder. So I think we can say that that was a huge success and achievement in reducing trivialization of the disorder and kind of, increasing understanding. And yeah, we've also shared an open letter, OCD Action's open letter. They're the leading UK charity for OCD, which demands the UK government to do those four goals, basically, to recognize and count people with OCD. Because in the UK healthcare system, in the NHS, the OCD is not currently recognized and counted. So it's well, it's recognized, but it's not counted for. So when people are coming with these symptoms and then getting treatment, that data is not being recorded systematically, which is then, of course, maybe not surprising that only 89p per person with OCD is spent on research, as opposed to £8 per person on depression. Because if those numbers aren't there and the seriousness isn't recorded and the treatment outcomes aren't recorded, it's really hard to argue for money and funding for the services. But the good news is that, like, I did want to mention that OCD is really treatable, and that's another myth around it, is that it's not and that you can't get better. And you can, and there's evidence-based treatment that's really highly effective for people with OCD, which is cognitive behavioral therapy with an active ingredient of, with an ingredient called exposure and response prevention, which is the active ingredient in the CBT. So it's really important that it includes that exposure and response prevention therapy for OCD to break that cycle. So yeah, I guess the good news is that it does exist and it's recommended by, you know, clinical bodies. It's just unfortunate that often the services aren't, there's not enough therapists trained in that those therapies, and they're not easily accessible, or not as accessible as they need to be, which is why we've got those goals and why the awareness is so important.
I found that actually staggering that they don't count people with OCD. I found it really amazing, and that the stats that we know, between 1-2% of the population, or we thought we knew, are best guesses by experts. And, you know, I found it extraordinary in the age where we've got this sort of, you know, digital way of recording, that, you know, we do count depression, we count schizophrenia and psychosis, but we don't count OCD. And it just seems like, how are you supposed to know what the scale of the problem is, and how are you supposed to plan for treatments if you don't really know how many people are presenting with it? It just seemed like a strange thing not to count it. So I think, you know, and that was an OCD action goal, and I think we're fully behind pushing for that. And one of the next stages with the game is thinking about who else do we share the game with? Who do we start that conversation with? Who can actually influence in a way to start thinking about this being added to the sort of the NHS remit for counting people with OCD? So again, this is all part of the work. It doesn't stop here once the game is out. It's kind of like, how do we influence, and how do we get to the right spaces to see these changes?
And we would encourage people, as you know, to help contribute to our goals, to sign the open letter, which explains and shows the evidence. Actually, the manifesto with the open letter shows the evidence for all of what we've spoken about. And by signing it, you can help push towards helping us achieve these goals. So that's a very like tangible action that can be taken, and we'd really appreciate that, as well as playing the game, of course.
I also wanted to make sure to ask about stigma, specifically stigma with OCD, what it can look like, how it can play out, its impacts, and maybe how to not contribute to it.
I think the stigma is around, well, from my own experience, around the taboo intrusive thoughts. So the kind of intrusive thoughts or images around sexually taboo topics, around violence, around harm. I think those kind of thoughts and images are very taboo, and kind of, I think the stigma comes from people not understanding that they're ego dystonic. So with OCD, people experiencing these thoughts is the opposite to their values, and that's why they feel such an awful way about them, and why they react so negatively and so anxiously. So they're really the opposite to us as values. But I think we have such a strong kind of connection in our societies around like thoughts being kind of indicative of who we are, and thoughts being us, basically, when actually a lot of the time they're junk. And but for people with OCD, they don't label them as junk. They instead label them as high importance and feel the need to respond to them. So I think the taboo and the stigma is mainly, I'd say, around those more what people would call inappropriate thoughts and images. And that's quite hard to talk about, that side of things. And people are speaking out more about those themes, such as like paedophilia, OCD, or, you know, worrying if you've been a serial killer, or worrying if you're, you know, going to kill your family, like all of these kind of thoughts. I think that people are speaking out more about those, but of course there is stigma attached to them. So yeah, it's quite difficult for that side of things. But by raising awareness of OCD and understanding the scope of it and all of the different manifestations, they all kind of come back to that same cycle and all are treated in the same way, actually, with the kind of therapies that break that cycle. But yeah, real education is what's needed so that people, you know, there's higher suicide rates, of course, of people with OCD. And I think that that's where it really to do with stigma.
Is there anything else either of you think it's important to bring to our conversation today?
I would just say that even if you haven't played a game before, give this one a go. Right, the Steam platform, you know, you can just play it on a laptop or a desktop, any sort of computer. You just download Steam, you set up an account, it's free, the Steam is free, and then you search She Could Fly and you download it onto your computer. We're very cheap, $4.99, $5.99. I don't know what that is in Canadian dollars, but there's like so many brilliant games on Steam. So I would give it a go. It only takes 90 minutes, so the length of even shorter than a film these days. And I think, you know, you don't have to be a gamer to enjoy this game. And it's not a difficult game. It's kind of like a story game that you kind of walk through, a walking experience where you're picking stuff up and, you know, it's not... You're not going to be tricky, stuck there for hours and hours, wandering in loops and never being able to escape. We've designed it so you can get out of the game. But so I'd say, yeah, just give it a go, even if you're not a gamer.
Yeah, I mean, I was the first game I'd played, and I was like worried that I wouldn't even be able to play the game that I'd helped create. But when I, you know, downloaded it and did the point and click and with my keypad or even with my mouse, it's actually, yeah, very accessible first time gamers and could like really bring you into the world. So I think that, yeah, it could be really, really great for lots of people. So I would encourage everyone to play and also to seek support if you are struggling with those intrusive thoughts or images and compulsions, mental or physical. The OCD Action is the leading UK charity, but they, you know, you can gain information and everything from their website, or the International OCD Foundation might be more appropriate as well, which have like lots of different helpline numbers attached to it and lots of information for global OCD support. So I would really encourage people, and even if you're not struggling with it yourself, to go there, because I'm sure someone you know is. So yeah.
Sarah Kenny and Mairead Rouhan speaking to me about the documentary escape game, She Could Fly. The game, which educates around obsessive compulsive disorder, was released on the platform Steam earlier this July.
People First Radio, People First Media, and People First Stories are community media projects of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society and are produced in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed do not necessarily represent the views of Vancouver Island Mental Health Society or its broadcast, podcast, and social media partners.